those of you on the telephone, we're going to give everybody that's on the video broadcast just a couple of moments to get up to speed. Sometimes it takes a few moments on this delay, so let's give them just a moment to catch up with us. For those of you, if you're picking this up on your video, we'll be starting in just a couple of moments. Okay, we're ready. And welcome to Tuesday night. This is our celebration of life, opportunity to get together once a week and talk about principles that can change our lives. Anybody having one of those days? It's very interesting, some of the things that can happen in the first few minutes just before we come on the air. I'm just taking a big deep breath and doing all that I can to be with you tonight. It's my intention to show up with all the inattention that I can to serve you this night. We want to welcome all of those who are here for the first time, our guests that are here tonight, our affiliates, our coaches, our clients. It's so good to have you with us tonight. Tonight we're going to be talking about a couple of very interesting topics, and a couple of them aren't in your material, but they're meant to assist you in taking your material to a deeper level. For those of you who are visiting with us, every Tuesday night we meet, and we discuss one of the six qualities of an intentional creator. The intention is to assist us in driving these principles deeper and deeper into our lives so that we can find more happiness and more peace of mind as we're going through this world. We're living in a time where there's a lot of firestorms, and some of those firestorms are just nipping at our heels, and sometimes they catch us just a little bit. We want to be able to rise above all of that and to be okay and healthy and whole and peaceful in spite of the firestorms, so that we can intentionally create the life of our dreams. And that's our purpose here tonight, is to discuss some of those principles to take us a little deeper into that process. Now, I want you to do a couple of things. I was going to do this with a graphic, but I was a little nervous with the technology, so I'm going to just visually give you a couple of things to consider. I'd like everybody to have a piece of paper and a pen so that you can be taking notes. So grab a piece of paper and a pen. In the middle of this piece of paper, I'd like you to make a circle about an inch and a half in diameter, and I'll just do it right with you. So we have a circle about an inch and a half in diameter. In the middle of that circle, I would like you to write these words, core, C-O-R-E, core self. Everybody have that? Core self. Now we're going to make a circle a little bit bigger around that circle, concentric circle, maybe about 3 inches in diameter. So just make that circle. And then we'll label that circle private self. Our private self. Everybody have that? Now we want to make a little bit larger circle. A bigger one that's, so we've got the little one in the middle, a little bigger one around it, now even a bigger one, about 5 inches in diameter. And we're going to call that one our public self. Now, in our core self, if you want to just take a line and draw out here to the side from core self to just make some notes, our core self is where we have a conversation with ourselves about ourselves. This is where we talk to ourselves about how do we feel about our worthiness and about our ability and about our appearance and our possessions and about our belief systems. It's in this core self that we have a discussion with ourselves about whether we feel grateful. Are we happy where we are and the roles that we're playing and the way our life is playing out? It is here in this core self that we will visit the future and see possibilities. Sometimes that's in fantasy, and sometimes that's in constructive thought. Oh, excuse me. Coughed right into the microphone, sorry. It is here that we will examine all of the work that's required to get from where we are to where we want to be. This conversation we have with ourselves, about ourselves. It is also the place where we have a conversation with ourselves about those things that are outside of us. How do do we really feel about people? Are we really passionate about what we're doing? What's our conversation on this topic? How do we feel when someone presents us with rules and regulations and policies and procedures? How do we feel about a person's performance or appearance or their belief system? How do we feel about ideas and how to solve problems? How strongly do we feel about our ideas about how those problems should be solved? That's the conversation that's going on in our core self. This is also, if you're a prayerful person and believe in a power beyond yourself, that that conversation with that power beyond yourself occurs. It occurs in this core self. Now, this core self, if you can write this word, can either be sacred. That's a place that's reverent, that's peaceful, a place where we are happy. Or it can be a secret place where we have thoughts and secret behaviors that we would never want to have broadcast from the rooftops because we would be shameful if anyone knew. We might even be fearful if they were to discover. Now, we know that in this core self, this is the richest, deepest part of who I really am. And it helps us understand when Og spoke to us in Scroll 1 when he said, my core self, I have surrendered my free will to the years of accumulated habits. You see, it's in the core self, these thought processes, that we measure in the intentional creation assessment. Now, we don't measure what a person thinks, just how they think. And we know the risks associated with thinking that way. So when a circumstance comes into this core self, we have a pretty good idea of the kinds of things a person might think and what they might do as a result of that thinking. Now, in this particular place, if I have some thought processes that aren't balanced, and they want me to question my worth, they want me to question my ability, they want me to question my belief systems, they want me to be protective and reserved when I'm around people, they want me to feel uncomfortable and intimidated when someone looks successful, they want me to be right about my ideas, they want me to escape and avoid the future. Excuse me. They want me to go somewhere into the future to a time when I'm rich and begin living vivid visualizations of what it'll be like then, only to be thrown down into those dark dungeons of despair and discouragement when reality shows up differently. They may want me to do those things in this core self. That's why Og said, I've surrendered my free will. The real me in this core, I have surrendered me to those years of accumulated habits. And the past deeds of my life, what I might do in secret, what I might do in private, what I might do in public, have already threatened to imprison my future. The whole purpose of all that we do with the six qualities is, first of all, to measure these thought processes. Which thought processes in here are supporting me? Which ones will assist me in finding peace of mind and happiness, in becoming abundant in all areas of my life, privately and publicly? And which thought processes might want to sabotage those efforts? The very first thing we want to be able to do in this process is to become aware of that fact. Now, I know this is a private place. We hardly ever let anybody in this space, even when we have nothing to hide. This is a sacred space. We might let a loving and trusted companion see part or maybe all of this. Maybe a therapist. Maybe a member of the clergy, or maybe a trusted coach. But these will be very carefully selected people to let into this place we call our core self. It becomes increasingly difficult to let anyone in if our thought processes are way out of balance and we have surrendered our free will to them and our actions have already marked out a path that threatens to imprison our future. Now, our objective is to find out what those are, then assist you in taking back control of your thoughts so that you can manage them effectively. And as you manage them increasingly effectively, you'll find more peace of mind. You'll find more happiness and joy. Now, there are things that happen in our lives. I had one a little while ago. Got an email that needed to be addressed, and oh my goodness, it's like, yeah, you got thought processes that get all kinds of energy around those things. We all have those moments. We step back from them, and we manage them the best we can so that we have peace of mind, and we have happiness, and we become increasingly abundant. Now, we will not have all of these thought processes totally balanced, probably in our lifetime. Og said in Scroll 2, there'll come a day when my awareness, that's what he talked about, his shield, my awareness, I can set aside and walk unencumbered among all the children of men, and my name will be raised high on the pyramid of life. I only know a few people who've had their name raised high on the pyramid of life. So we're going to spend a lifetime. Stephen Covey popularized this concept. He borrowed it as well, but I want you to hear this. We can be in a state in our life where we are unconscious and incompetent. We don't know that we don't know. We're just banging into walls and can't figure it out. And then we have an opportunity to find out what's really going on, and the first reaction can be, wow, I'm consciously incompetent. That can be a reaction, even to the intentional creation assessment. One, I may not want to know. I don't want anybody else to know. I don't even want to deal with it. As Ramona says from one of our favorite movies, Moonstruck,
I don't want to talk about it.
I don't want to talk about it. It's a great line from that movie. And all of a sudden, when we do find it, our initial reaction, and often because of self-esteem questions, are going, gosh, I finally can see that I'm incompetent. We want to move very quickly into embracing our strengths and learning to manage these thought processes with practices and processes so that we can move to the third step quickly, and that's called consciously competent. And we will spend most of our life in one degree or another in that space. Consciously competent. Drifting in and out, sometimes making mistakes, sometimes handling things better than other times. We just work our way through that process. Consciously competent. And the more conscious we are, the more in control we are, the happier we are in our core self. The more joy we experience, the more peace of mind. Now, Og says there can come that time, and in Stephen Covey's analogy, it is, her example, it's unconsciously competent. I don't even have to be aware. I just am naturally that way. Most of us haven't reached that point, nor will in this lifetime. So be okay with the fact that during your life, you're going to want to be conscious and increasingly competent. Now, why is this so important? Because the core of ourself dictates everything else that happens as we move outward. Ideally, as we're working on being consciously competent, and we only let a few people into this space, the wall around it ideally would be clear glass, nothing to hide, no shame, no fear, ideally. May maybe it's a little opaque for some, and some it might be a protective wall. Don't want anybody to see inside till we get the house cleaning done and clean it up a little bit. But eventually we want to be able to expand our boundaries. This is ideal. Expand our boundaries. So feel this. I open up and I include a few more people. My family and my friends. Then we open up our boundaries a little bit more and we include those people in our public life. Those from work or from community service. And sometimes those we might even go to church with. We haven't invited some of them in here yet, maybe. So we have our public self. And notice I said expanding boundary. We show up here, and the same person shows up here, just with more people. Then the same person shows up here with more people. The risk is this. If our core is so challenged that it's a secret place, it's a disturbing place, it's full of chaos and anxiety and frustration and overwhelm, when we step out here, we have to, in many ways, pretend to be something we're not so that we can function. Those closest to us see probably the closest version of that confusion because we don't have the energy to always be at our best in that environment. As we go out wider to the public, this is where we might be the most protective, the most fearful of anyone understanding or seeing. Because if they were to know, it would crash in on top of us, and someone would eventually discover. Now, with caution, some on the call tonight may feel that, I don't want anybody to discover. It's been my experience that most of the time when we feel that, it's not because of behavior that's inappropriate, it's self-esteem speaking. It's one of those unhealthy thought processes that we've measured. We're going to talk about a couple of them tonight. These thought processes that want to jump in and sabotage us and leave us feeling very angry and frustrated. Because when we're here, it ripples out to those in our private life, and it can ripple out to those in our public life. So if we can see, the reason why we do this is because we're in the business of self-growth. We're in the business of getting to the heart of the matter, to the real issues. Otherwise, we would be doing public improvement or private improvement, neither of which will ultimately change this. We can have nice things and go pursue wealth, and we want to have all kinds of success. And far too many that I know who have achieved because this is not healthy still do not have peace of mind. What a tragedy. So our invitation to all that are with us tonight, all who will ever hear our words, let us go to the core. Let us have the courage to go to the very source from which everything starts. Because if we've got a volcano going on in here, it will find its way to the surface. Can we work here first? If you haven't taken an assessment, go to intentionalcreation.com and take it. If you'd like to spend a few minutes with one of our coaches, these are wonderful people, well-trained, confident, and they will keep confidences. Our discussions with our clients are totally confidential. This is an opportunity for you to bring somebody into here and kind of sort through things. And just know that every one of us, coaches included, are still doing exactly the same thing. The only difference is we now are conscious, and we're beginning the journey of being competent. And we want to invite you to come along. So please take your assessment. After you take your assessment, you have the option of picking up some tools. Many of you are access the code for this call tonight in your group coaching section of your tools. Right below your assessments is Creation Tools. There's an entire tool suite. It's called Intentional Creation Studio. And in that studio, and it's interesting, I often am doing group coaching sessions and someone will say, I just found my studio. For some reason, they hadn't gone there yet or really explored it. There's a section there on the 10 scrolls that allows you to listen to Og narrate each one of the scrolls, hear about an hour's worth of breakthroughs I've had about each one of the scrolls, to be able to listen to keys, little bite-sized pieces to help us better understand the scrolls. And then there's a section for each one of the qualities. Click on Quality 1, an entire table of contents. You click on that table of contents, and you get to go to, I probably should do this so it makes sense to you. We click on this side, table of contents, and then a learning center. And in the learning center, there are audios to assist you in listening. You can download the transcription of the audio. You can download a coaching guide. You can take the audio and download it to an MP3 player and play it in a sound system you have in the shower if you want to in the morning or when you're out exercising. Whatever works, driving in your car, put it through the sound system in your car and spend time with these principles. I could have the honor of being with you on a regular basis. Forgive me, I've got just a little bit of a cold tonight. But I could be with you walking through these principles in the core of your life if you'd let me in and walk you through some of these principles and help you sort through and start implementing practices. Ramona just indicated to me I forgot to turn on the record for the video. Too many buttons for me. Now we're recording, now that we've gone through the process already. So here we are, ready to take on another one of these qualities. We've talked about connecting with people and how we can become good listeners and step into someone's world and bring our life experiences into that sacred place and listen. Sometimes people will let us into their public world. Sometimes they'll let us into their private world. Sometimes even into their sacred world when we listen. And they know that we know where they are and we didn't try to fix them. We become a safe place. And connection at a very deep and wonderful level can occur. That's quality number one. We can use that in selling products, in relationships, honoring and caring about people, and serving them. Quality number two, we learn how to use our mind constructively. So many of us are spending time over there in that dark place where there's fantasy and then catastrophe and counterfeit forms of pleasure, very dark place. And we learned in quality number two how to use our mind constructively to get inspired ideas and impressions and solutions to problems that ignite our passion. And quality three, we bring that passion into the here and now and we take action. And that passion drives our focus and our discipline and our effort and, of course, the action, purpose-driven action, to turn that thing which we created in our mind into reality in tangible existence. This place, I can reach out and touch the screen. I can touch this. This is real where we are. This is real. This is where we want our dreams. We don't want them just in our mind. We actually want to be living them. So we did mental creation, now we do physical creation. Well, as we do this process, we discover that there are some other thought processes that get in the way, and those are the ones we're going to talk about tonight, because quality number four is entitled discipline and structure. Now, here's the truth. For most people who are aggressively pursuing the concept of abundance. About 97 to 98% of them have thought processes that resist structure. If they had this perfect structure, they could be a great airline pilot or a CPA and do audits. But they resist the structure. They also sometimes avoid the discipline required. I've often heard people say to me, I want to fire my boss. And I smile and say, then be willing to apply for the job. Because there is no such place as ease. I'm gonna get out of my burdensome job, the boring, mundane, repetitious work I do, and go into business for myself where I've got time freedom and financial freedom and no more stress and pain and debt. And I'm going, I wish I knew where this place was. It doesn't exist. You may work harder than you've ever worked before. The difference will be that you'll be excited about what you're creating. It will be passion that drives your action. You can work tirelessly, but only if you exercise basic discipline and structure. Now, for most of us, the word, let's say, rules, policies, procedures, obedience, any of those words kind of raise the hair up on the back of your neck, just a little resistance. Perhaps you grew up in a family or have had a companion in the past who was controlling, or an employer who was very controlling, and you just felt so micromanaged all the time. Oh, you just want to break free, and if you could ever break free, you will never get yourself in a situation like that ever again. And as a result, we often throw the baby out with the bathwater. We often resist the very structure required to create success. I would like you to consider a new possibility tonight. I still remember when a dear friend, Margie Weed, said this to me, when we're talking about the word obedience. She said, I view obedience as an invitation to freedom. But how is that possible, Dave? Well, the route between here and becoming abundance is somewhat circuitous. It goes around these rocky shoals, and if we're not careful, we'll just keep running into things that we can't see that are just below the surface of the water. This is called a strait, an S-T-R-A-I-T, a strait. We're going around the strait. We're following a chart, a map, much like the scrolls. Even Og even calls them. I have these charts now in my hands that will lead me to success. Even refers to them as charts. Imagine being a captain of a beautiful boat, and you've got the chart laid out in front of you, and you're navigating your way, navigating through all the pitfalls that can be there between these islands so that you can get to your destination called success and abundance. And all of a sudden it says in the chart, you'll go a few degrees to the right, and then a few degrees to the left, and a few degrees to the right, because right here, 3 feet under the water, there's a really sharp rock. Of course I go around the rock, and around the next one, the next one. I'm doing this assuming I'm even open to the possibility of being subjected to the need to follow this chart. If I'm resistant to rules and policies and procedures, I may discount this chart and not even look. I'm going to go through those waters. I can see where I want to be, and I just go. And all of a sudden, boom, I hit one of those rocks and it rips out my hull. And they tow me to a dry dock. And now I've got serious delays in my journey. They repair it. And what do? I go out again. And I just crash into the next one and crash into the next one. Dry dock, dry dock, dry dock, delay, delay, delay. and in my desire to do it my way, without being controlled by anyone, I end up taking far longer than is necessary to achieve my goal, if I ever do it at all. For those of us who have this tendency in our thought process, in our core, imagine what happens when we're in resistance and it ripples out into our private life, and then it ripples out into our public life. What kinds of things start to show up when we feel strongly about something? Is there ever a risk that we're going to need to be right about our idea? Is there ever a risk that we might crush someone? Everybody take your hands like this and intertwine your fingers. You do this? For those of you on the telephone, I'm just taking my fingers, intertwining them, and squeezing my palms together. Has everybody got that? This hand, my left hand, is my idea. My right hand is my self-worth. They are inextricably connected. Try to point out the flaw in my idea without offending my self-worth. It is impossible. This occurs, this connection, about 95% of the time. That's 9.5 out of 10 people. And these thought processes could be so strongly opinionated that in my core self, if I have surrendered myself to them, they'll need to be right. And they have to be right about everything. Everything. Whether it's the topping on a pizza or thermonuclear warfare. They have to be right. And so they begin to crush. It's time for us to surrender. Just surrender. And let go of some of these resistant and rebellious thought processes. I was sitting right here at this computer a better part of 2 years ago, a little over 2 years ago, working on this quality. And I had this impression. I just got back from a speech, and on the airplane, I was listening to Josh Groban. And there's a song, one of his albums, entitled Let Me Fall. And it's this haunting melody. It's so beautiful. It just captured my attention. And I was sitting here at 4 o'clock in the morning, which was the time I designated every morning for writing, and I felt impressed to turn on my iPod and listen to that song. And as I was listening, I wanted to hear the lyrics. But my hearing is such that I can hear the music, but I just can't quite make out clearly the lyrics. So I got the impression, go on the internet and see if you can find them. Well, it took a moment, and there they were. Here I was, a little bit after 4, listening to Josh Groban, reading these lyrics, and having a deeply emotional experience. He spoke to this very topic I was writing to that very morning. I've got them here. Let me share them with you. And I'll do a little editorializing while I do it. He says, let me fall. Let me climb. There is a moment when fear and dreams must collide. Think about that. There's something I want to create. And there's something in here that has me fearful. And Og says, my procrastination, which has held me back, is born of fear. I have learned that secret mind from the depths of all courageous hearts. Now I know that to conquer this fear, I must act without hesitation. The flutters in my heart will vanish. Now I know that action will turn that lion of terror to an ant of equanimity. There is a point, if we want to get to our dreams, every courageous heart who ever created their dreams has come face to face with their fear. And then they took action. So let me fall. Let me climb. There's a moment when my fear and dreams must collide. Then there's someone I am. someone I am. I am is a very powerful phrase. I am. That's the person in this core. When we are in charge of our thought processes and conscious, I am. This is who I am. I am is waiting for my courage. The one I want. The one I want. The one I will become is waiting for me. When we're facing some of these fears, we hang on to and resist and resent because we don't know what's going to be out there. Our fear of the unknown is greater than our fear of the known. We may not like this place, but at least we know it. And Josh Groban is saying, let go. Be a skydiver and jump out the window. Let it go. And fall. This moment has to come, and it does for every courageous heart. And the one I am will catch me. Now, I share in the material a fun story of Cindy Ragsdale, who on her 50th birthday did skydiving. Kevin Hall tells a funny story about that in his book, you know, where the instructor's almost using that long hammer on a stick to break off his fingers so he'll actually jump off of the wing. Sometimes we're hanging on for fear. But we can't have the experience of abundance, of success, of happiness, unless we're willing to let go of this resistance and resentment and take on our lives. Now I want to share with you a couple of very specific exercises that I want you to focus on this week. The first exercise is called the need to be right. Now those who know me are probably laughing as I share this. I'm working on this too. You see, the thought processes, if you look on your assessment, discipline, teachable, analytical, methodical, these four measurements in particular, can get really attached. They're called systemic thoughts. And all that means is they process in our mind only. This is the only place they exist. And they process dualistically. What that means is all or nothing. Right or wrong. Life or death. Can you feel it? So all of a sudden we're thinking a lot, and this thing is fixed in our mind, and there's no negotiation. Now we can step back from it, but it's very hard to do. Very hard to do. And when we have reached this point, we will most likely need to be right. And in our needing to be right, make somebody else wrong and crush them. So here's our exercise. Now, this is in great detail in your studio, but I'm going to give you an outline, especially for our guests who are visiting tonight. And you want to be careful with your self-esteem, because this isn't about you. This is about this habit of thinking in here that sometimes wants to control who I am. It's not who you are. It's just a thought process that wants to control who I am. So you sit down, you pick somebody out, you say, who in my life has been most adversely impacted by my need to be right? Now, I remember one funny circumstance where I gave this assignment to a new coaching client. She came back the next week and said, nobody said anything. I said, well, share with me what you ask. She said, what's it like to be in a relationship with someone who's always right? I said, oh, let's adjust that just a little bit. We sit down with this candidate. We want to select a very quiet place where you have a conversation. For those of you who were with us last week, it's a power session. This is a really intense power session where we really bring all of our ability to step into someone's world and really listen. And we asked, what has it been like for you to be in a relationship with me when my thought processes want to be right? See, this isn't you. It's my thought processes. Tell me what your experience is of these guys. And then we are going to just listen. Create a safe place. Lean in. Just lean in the conversation. Please share with me. Now, if we have been resistant, rebellious, need to justify and defend and fix, this person may be just a little hesitant to say anything. And they may test it with just a little something. Well, you know, occasionally every once in a while this happens. Tell me more about that. And I want you to hear the tone in my voice. Tell me more about that. Or share with me your experience. Or is there anything else that would be helpful for me to know? And it's not, is there anything else you want to tell me? I mean, you just beat the crap out of me. We don't want to be in that space. We really want to know. What's it like for you when I allow these guys to be in charge? We don't get to respond to anything. Just tell me more about that. Share with me what you're thinking. Is there anything else that would be helpful for me to know? And when they're done, we conclude with this statement. Thank you. I'll be working on that one. Now, what's the likelihood that they might say something to us that these guys don't agree with? That's not what I said last Thursday. What I said was, or at least what I meant was, and they're going to start chewing and talking and obsessing over this, and we're going to be sitting here going, do I get stuck in it? Because if I do, in the next 24 to 48 hours, I'll find an occasion to talk to this person again. Let's say, for an example, you're a man talking to a companion and she's at the sink and you walk up and put your arms around her and give her a kiss on the back of the neck and you say, sweetheart, I really enjoyed our conversation last night. That was just the best conversation we have ever had. However, you mentioned that last Thursday I said this. I really feel bad that you misunderstood me. Can you hear this thought process needing to be right? This is kind of a backdoor approach, passive-aggressive. Just so sad that you had to spend so much time worrying about that or being hurt by it, because that's really not what I meant. What I meant was fix, 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 and everything we gained in the first discussion has just been destroyed, and our trust has probably been damaged a little bit. Wow. So put on your notes 24 to 48 hours, because whatever is said in that meeting, it has to be let go, entirely let go. Well, there's your first exercise. Sometime this week, sit down with a person who's been most adversely impacted by your need to be right when you're surrendering your free will to these guys. What's it been like for you when I need to be right because I'm listening to these guys? Have some fun with this one. The next one is best used in a business setting. It can be used in a family setting as well, but very helpful in a business setting. We talked a few weeks ago about intrinsic validation. We know that everybody has a wall, and behind that wall, they hold back at least 40% of their cooperation and productivity on average in a non-adversarial and relatively stress-free environment. That's probably two friends or committed companions. Even then, we're holding back up to 40% of our cooperation. If we're in a discussion and it's become a right-wrong discussion, people hold back 100% of their cooperation and productivity. 100%. So, what do we do? Oh, Og says, that love is the greatest secret of success in all ventures. We know that when he wrote that scroll, he was talking about agape love, a heightened level of awareness. This is an invitation for us to step back from our thought processes and listen more intently to the other person's idea in search of something that we like about that idea. We don't have to agree with the idea. This isn't about agreement. This is about identifying something in that idea that we like. Now, just know that if you try this the very first time, when you feel strongly about something, this is when it's going to be the most powerful. You feel really strongly about this, and they're wrong. And we go to find the good. We say, oh, no, I'm going to step back from that. I'm going to find the good in their idea. You're going to hear these little guys going, don't do it! Don't do it! They'll think you agree with them and you won't get your way! You got to hear them screaming? Can you hear them? Just say, just shut up. I'm living a higher law than right and wrong. I'm going to use intrinsic validation because I know this secret. They have a wall. And all of their cooperation is behind the wall. I need their cooperation to be able to reach some agreement regarding this matter. I can't get it with a wall. So we find good in their wall. And remember this? We find fault. We injure our self-esteem. And for those of you on the phone, I've taken my two hands and intertwined my fingers and squeezed my palms together. Left-hand idea, right-hand self-worth. The converse is true. Find good in the idea, and we have found good in the person. We have become a safe place, and down comes the wall. And now, we can have a conversation. Something interesting happens. We might really have to search for that idea. I often talk about in my material the avocado tree, because it's just such a clear example. When we were in California with avocado trees on our property, and you get up underneath an avocado tree and you're looking up trying to find an avocado. You can't see one. There's just nothing there. Where are they? Maybe this tree didn't produce any. Then all of a sudden, you see one. And the instant you see one, you see 100 of them. They're just everywhere. They just came out of nowhere. And so it is when we look for the good in a person's idea. When we see one thing that's good, we are breaking down our wall, our blindness. These thought processes create. We're no longer thinking systemically, systems thinking. We're now thinking intrinsically, the value of the human being. And when that happens, we can start to see more a good idea. Where did those come from? I didn't see that before. Wow, that's a good idea. Well, that could be a good idea. Yeah, that could be a good idea. And all of a sudden, we see more and more, and we can start to more comfortably let go of our need to be right. And then we bring our ideas and say, what would you think if we did that and we added this? And a conversation can ensue where there can be a compromise. There can be some agreement. So the exercise is called, what I like best about your idea is. And then share it. I know these guys are going to be upset, but look till you find it. And watch the miracles that you create. If you manage a team, imagine being there and saying, Sally, would you share with us your idea? It's done. Harold, what did you think? What did you like best about Sally's idea? I like this. Great. Harry, what do you think we should do? Da-da-da, Sally, what did you like best about his idea? What I like best about it was this. We may find some really good ideas, and then we share ours. What did you like best about that idea, Sally? What did you like best about that? And now we have involved everyone's best ideas in the solution of a problem. What I like best about your idea is. Well, I have one more piece to add tonight. In these thought processes dealing with discipline and structure, because they process in all or nothing, or right or wrong, or win or lose, they do not have a funny bone. They just don't have one. I should have Ramona run upstairs and get a copy of a communication she had with our daughter the other day in emails, except for it's one of those things in our private world where we're bringing humor to a situation. But I will share with you the story that I have in the material. Because I was just on the phone this afternoon with our daughters. As you know, every 1 o'clock on Tuesday, that's where I am with our four daughters and Ramona in a coaching session. And one of our daughters, Christina, oh, we're going to lose her soon. Her and her husband and their two children are going to be going to Washington, D.C. For a job assignment. We're so excited for him and for them. I'm going to miss them. And listening to her voice is just so sweet just to hear it. And this occasion occurred at her wedding to Brian. It was my turn as the father of the bride to speak. So I stood and went to the front of the room and went to the microphone and began to share. We had spent 10 years paying back $1 million in debt. We had just put our lives back together and paid off our debts. And oh, what a great place to be in life. For the first time, I was feeling financial freedom. And as I stood at the microphone, just like this microphone I'm at right now, and I started to share, Christina's hilarious. She's funny. So I started telling stories about Christina, and I was laughing. They were laughing. We had the most delightful time telling the stories. And when I got done, I walked down from the front back to our table, and my oldest son stood. He's a big man. And he reached his hands out to me like this. And he just held me. Then he kissed me on the cheek and whispered in my ear, Dad, it's good to have your funny back. How many of us would be served by finding moments to get our funny back? I know I'm intensely serious. And what I do, I take so seriously. I know I'd be served by a few more moments when I get my funny back. To that end, this week your assignment is to study scroll number 7. I will laugh at the world, because we are most comical when we can't laugh at ourselves. And as Ramona gave advice to our daughters this morning, she said, always remember, this too shall pass. That was in reference to poopy diapers and sick kids and everything else that goes on in the lives of a mom. This too shall pass. What a beautiful scroll. As Og explains to us how our digestion will improve, our health will be better, if we can find a space in our life for laughter. So as we surrender these thought processes and we choose to let go, because we've reached that point where fears and dreams have to collide. They were there. And we let go of the resistance. And we jump in and do the principles. We actually start listening and stepping into people's worlds. We catch ourselves not going there today. Daughter said the day she pulled out the tomahawk 80 times today, not going there today. I'm not going to go spend any time over there in that discouragement, despair, and fantasy. I'm going to spend it in a constructive thought process, mentally rehearsing, seeking inspiration, exploring, planning, goal setting, problem solving, so I continually get inspired ideas and impressions that will ignite my passion. So the work is no longer boring and mundane. It is passion-driven. It's time for us to let go of resistance. Open up your studio this week. Spend some time listening to these recordings. Faithfully listen to Og 3 times a day and scroll 7 faithfully. Listen to these thought processes. I haven't got time. It's too much work. I got too much going on. Blah, 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 blah. Do it anyway. I am going to catch you. The real you will catch you if you'll jump in and surrender. And when you do, something will light up in your soul. And you'll find happiness. and peace of mind in your core. And when you find it in your core, it will radiate to your private life, those closest to you. And it will radiate out to your public life, those you meet. This is called, literally, the law of attraction. We are attracted to this core being when it is consciously competent. Pleasure assessment. Let's begin the study. Let's work on quality number 4 this week. Let's see what it's like when we are listening to some of these sabotaging thought processes and we need to be right. Let us find the good in somebody else's idea. And let us show up whole and complete and real and genuine and authentic. Thanks, everybody. Good night, and we look forward to next week. We're going to take on the topic of finding joy in the journey. Gratitude, joy and sorrow, work and remuneration, recognition, time management, finding purpose in all that we do. Can't wait till next week. That'll be an exciting discussion. This week, let's take on these stubborn, resistant thought processes. And just know that when we obey, follow the charts, they are an invitation to the very freedom of